it was hard to sort them and find ones that were sort of similar. So we decided that we are going to just read through all of them. Shona will give as brief of an answer to each one of them as she can. If she hasn't touched on something that you'd like to hear more of, I'm sure she's available at lunchtime. All right. We're going to be bouncing back and forth because she'd like me to read the questions. How does one reach out to one who suffers from pride and does not wish to receive help? Meanwhile, the family suffers.
Well, that is difficult. I accept that is very difficult. And it comes down to whether the person themselves has any insight into whether they have a problem and whether they need help. If it's a man, if it's a son or it's a dad, I think the best approach usually would involve another man that's important in that young man's life or that husband's life, to, who knows them and who they trust, who can get alongside them in an unrelated way and try and get an in terms of addressing what's going on in your life and what are you doing to address it. If it's a wife or a daughter, I think the same goes for that. It needs wisdom. As you know, if you take on someone who's loaded with pride head on, you're going to bounce right off. So it needs wisdom. But you know what? Above all else, it needs prayer. God can break pride in a moment. And prayer is the most important thing.
What kind of sins would cause depression?
Maybe the commonest sin, or the precursor sin, if you like, for a lot of other sins, is neglect of the basic daily interaction with the Lord by neglecting devotions, neglecting prayer. Basically, dropping off your armor and being left very exposed to Satan coming in other subtle ways and leading you into sin. So, for example, the commonest one today is immorality. That is the one that gets most publicity. But it's other sins as well. It's becoming very critical, hypercritical of others, then losing your joy. It can be any range of, you know, even just covetousness. A number of these sins, particularly are heart sins that others may not see, but are there. And they can eat away at you when you don't realize it. And they are dangerous. And the antidote for all sin, whether it's internal or external, public or private, is to stay close to the Lord.
Do you feel or believe that fears of what others will say or think contributes or keeps us trapped in our depression?
I think it does, to a degree. It depends on how bad the depression is, because I think men have a bigger, harder time with this. It does seem to be harder for men to admit depression because it flies in the face of what men, especially in our society, are perceived to should be strong, unbreakable. Fear of others, I think, is partly fed into us well by society's norms, where everyone has to work hard, everyone prospers, everyone can do better if you just try hard enough. Nobody wants to be thought of as weak. But I think this is an opportunity, particularly for the Christian church, to be wide awake, to look around you. You can sometimes see in the face of somebody that they're suffering. Be open and be willing to talk to people. Don't shy away from people. I think it's very important that we are find out about one another's lives. And that will help a lot of people open up at times where it's appropriate.
In what ways can we help in times of depression when nothing seems to lift the sadness?
On a human level, you might feel, especially as a family member, that you really can't do anything. You've tried everything. Again, I would say, number one, prayer. Everything we bring to the Lord, and you bring this to the Lord as well. You ask God, show me how to help this person. I would say patience. Let them know you're praying. Pray with them out loud. If they're unable to focus or concentrate, read a little bit of scripture for them every day if you're living with them or you meet up with them. Practically, if it's something like burnout, help take the pressure off. Pick up the slack. If it's somebody with kids, if it's a mum with kids, offer to take them out, take them for the day, meals, anything like that. It can make a big difference in a person's life. And just give that amount of space. The sadness in and of itself can take a long time to lift. But the important thing is that you're actually making progress. Again, what are they doing in order for the sadness to lift? Do they want the sadness to lift? And who have they sought help from? Pastor, counsellor, doctor, or no one? So find out and direct them to the right appropriate channels.
Is functional neurological disorder caused by depression? I have two people who are dear to me diagnosed with this recently.
I believe it can be, the emphasis being on functional rather than a specific, clearly diagnosable neurological condition. There are people, and I think this is more common, has been more common in years gone by, who are literally shut down by depression, who appear to no longer be able to connect with the world. I remember a lady in one of the jobs I worked in the past, and she came from the island I'd come from. I knew she spoke Gaelic. She was in a culture where nobody else did. That woman hadn't looked someone in the eye or spoken or done anything socially for years. She sat in a chair, in a ward, ate, and that was it. Nobody had got a word out of her for years. So I just sat beside her, started rabbiting away in her own language, and she never spoke to me. But I thought, well, this is something I can do. It might trigger off something from the past. But she was functionally dysfunctional. So the answer is yes. But it tends to be maybe a more chronic depression that leads to that.
When someone feels like they are at the beginning stages of what you described, what are some practical ways to step back before it becomes worse? Did those around you realize you needed help earlier?
Knowledge is a very useful tool to have. And it's one of the purposes, I believe, of this conference. If we are aware of what burnout, depression looks like, then the early stages, you might be able, or somebody around you can see much sooner that you are running the risk of burning out. And again, it gets down to things like, are you sleeping? Are you going to bed at a reasonable time, getting up at the same time every day? Are you exercising? Are you eating regularly? Are you relaxing? I hadn't relaxed I couldn't remember when. I felt it was go, 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 morning, noon and night, moment I got out of bed, other than being able to read my Bible for a few minutes, then the first kid would appear and that was it, till I fell into bed at night, never thinking that I even deserved to take a break. And it was foolishness. But so look at some warning signs and address these three key issues. Downtime, sleep, exercise. Did those around you realize you needed help earlier? David probably figured, I know he did, there's something wrong. He didn't know what. I mentioned my parents were really concerned at the pace at which I was living life. My kids were too young to really know. And so that really didn't, they didn't notice.
What if your spouse is against medication? And then a second question, how do you know if it is environmental or genetic?
This first one is a very common scenario, I have to say, where one person, usually a husband or a wife, has got a good grasp of the problem, understands what's going on. They've tried everything else. But the one thing, it's almost like the unmentionable, is medication. All I can say is, again, that you find somebody, number one, you get information to them. You find out why they're against medication. Is it wrong views of medication? And I tried to address that earlier. And again, I get them to talk to somebody other than yourself who can give them the facts. Not internet facts, because whatever position you take, you can find it all out there. And even someone else who you know, maybe if it's your husband, a guy, same age, maybe knows him, who's been through it, he's been on it, get him to take him out and talk and be patient. And again, prayer is important. How do you know it's environmental or genetic? So is it external stressors, or is it you're born with it and there's nothing you can do about it? In some ways it doesn't matter, in some ways it does. The treatment is the same. The management is the same. What I would say about the genetic predisposition is that it's more to do with thresholds. So, for example, you know, the threshold of someone who has a genetic loading, if you like, is lower. They're vulnerable. They're much more likely to get depressed than someone who has no family history whatsoever. But either way, if you're in it, the treatment is the same. The physical, the mental, the emotional, the dealing with every area that's relevant. And it may be that someone who is genetically loaded, that even the normal stresses of life itself are too much, and therefore there's something that they're going to battle with a lot for the rest of their life. I should say environmental, if it's an incident that, you know, let's cause burnout, it's more likely you will recover and be able to have it better managed.
Well, I've got a bunch here.
They're all very similar.
Okay.
So I'll just read through these all so you know that we've seen them, but they're all very similar. How can I show love and walk alongside a sick friend and loved one that is showing signs of healing into a depression? What works? What words should or shouldn't be said? Can you give some practical advice for showing sympathy to those who suffer these things when you cannot personally relate? What encouragement would you give to someone who's very depressed but doesn't think they need help? How do you reach a person who you think is struggling with depression? How do you best support a family member suffering from anxiety or depression? What is the best way to approach someone you love and see is depressed and needs help? How can a spouse lovingly support their husband or wife that is struggling with depression? It's hard to know what to do. How do you best support a family member suffering, and what is the most helpful thing we can do?
So there's a little bit of range in these questions, but I think essentially, how do you support someone with depression? How can you help them? How do you avoid saying the wrong things? I think Job, the book of Job, has a lot to teach us about how not to handle someone in your life who has depression. His friends were his friends. They may well have been believers, but they were awful helps to him. And they actually made the problem worse by what they said. Better to say nothing than to say the wrong thing. So the most important thing is patience. To listen. To pray. And to be willing to answer questions where you can, and just to be there for that person. But I would say this about depression. There is a tendency, I've been there and anyone has been, because it's an illness of the mind and the emotions, it becomes very self-centered, very inward-looking, very focused, going round and round in the same circles. And it doesn't matter what objective truth is presented to you by your loved ones or wherever, even by the Word of God. You just can't grasp it. It's important to try and, I think, distract. By that I mean is to pull that, prize them out of that spiral into doing something physical, even for doing some physical work. You know, for guys to go out and do something in the yard, get fresh air, do something different. Yes, you feel awful. Yes, these thoughts are just tormenting you, but you have hands and legs and you can actually do something with it. Encourage them to look outside of themselves and have stated periods of time when we'll sit and we'll talk. But then we go out and we do something different and we don't talk about it at all. It just helps that person in a practical way to break this cycle. I think that's most of these ones. Also, just direct to the appropriate help. You've got the pastor, you've got elders, you've got close Christian friends, medical doctor, counselor, whatever is needed. It just makes sure your friend or spouse has access to all these helps.
Okay, a few more that are related. What was your reasons for not sharing your illness with your family? How or did or do your children recognize what happened and how did they deal with it? And could you confide in your husband? Did he have any idea of what you're going through? And how can I get started with God?
You maybe should answer one of these, David. Did you have any idea what was going on? I could. David and I have always confided in each other about everything, so I certainly could do that. Did he understand it initially? No. It actually, both of us had a kind of intellectual understanding of it. I'd seen people growing up in my father's pastorate who had depression, but I always thought they were weak. And patients who came in, I thought, well, I would treat them and help them. But I really did not connect emotionally or cognitively at all. And that's what it's like with a lot of people. So people need time to process what's happening. So yes, I could confide with David. And yes, he learned with me the rock face experience of living with depression and what it does and so on. I can say this, I do believe, and I think this is right, David, it did change the whole course of David's and my life forever. We would not be in this country, I don't believe, without that experience. How that all came about is another story entirely, but it's what God does. And don't despair. What you think is the worst thing that's happened to your family might be the most incredible thing, a tool in God's hand to bring glory to Him. My children were young, so they didn't. They probably saw Mum crying and said, what's wrong with Mum? As kids do, right? Or she's having a bad day or something. But in subsequent years, only really in recent years, maybe the last two or three, that my kids, we explained to them about these days. One of my kids, my daughter, read the book and was blown away. She had no, all these years, she had no idea that that had gone on. But it doesn't matter. If I did not share with my family, well, obviously I shared with those who could comprehend, who was David, my parents, my sister, two of them. I guess I wanted to hold on to reality. And I was the pastor's wife. Can you imagine this? You're the pastor's wife, you're one of the local community doctors. Are you going to tell everybody you're suffering from, you're having a mental breakdown? That was the reality of this. We think, looking back, that we should have told people, but we didn't, and whatever, you know. You can only live at this moment and do what you think is best at the time.
Is a fallen world... In a fallen world, isn't everyone to varying degrees troubled by depression? Is it helpful to treat some level of depression as normal in a fallen world?
Depression in and of itself, you know, it's as a loose term is depression of the emotions, the mind, whatever. There are two kinds of depression. Yes, because we are in a fallen world and our emotions, our minds are affected by the fall, there is an appropriate depression that we have. For example, over our sins, conviction of sin. And for some, that can be quite protracted before they're converted. There's grief, a normal grief reaction. And some of you will know this. I have not experienced it, I'll be perfectly honest with you, other than not right close. But those of you who do know that there are stages and that the depression part is an essential part of that. But it's a progress. In a normal, healthy individual, there is a development through these stages. It's when depression is prolonged and goes on for weeks, months. They say, you know, low mood, etc., etc., for 2 weeks is depression. But really, I think it has to go longer than that to really be able to diagnose what is pathological, what is abnormal, what is a sickness, an illness that needs treated. And other things too. You know, if you lose a leg or an arm, then you're going to be depressed, appropriately so, until a time that you readjust, lose a job, lose a house. So depression, as a loose term, of course, it's appropriate. And that is different from what you would call clinical depression.
Why is depression so prevalent among late teenagers and early 20-somethings?
Can I just quick add something to that? That appropriate depression is, I believe, the area where medication is seriously misused in North America and in the Western world. The overprescription of medication for people who are actually going through what is an appropriate reaction for any given circumstance, not clinical depression. And of course, that's, you know, because everyone today wants to be happy all the time, every day. And that is, I think, is what's behind that. Why is it among late teenagers, early 20-somethings? David will talk a bit more about that. It's reaching epidemic proportions, so suicide. There are a lot of reasons. We do not live in a country where we are persecuted for the faith. But we do live in a country where, and in a part of the world, you take the whole Western world here, the UK, Canada, and America, whatever, where our brains are literally bombarded day and night. And I don't even have to fill in the gaps as to what that is. Technology is probably the single biggest cause that is killing the brains of our young people, destroying their emotions. That is the real epidemic. The depression is, if you like, is the consequence of it. But I won't go into it any further because David's going to deal with that later. This is really interesting.
Is there a difference between burnout and depression?
In a sense, no. They're interchangeable. Strictly speaking, yes. Burnout is a cause. Depression is a diagnosis or a label, if you like. So as I mentioned earlier, you've got depression and there are lots of different pathways and burnout is just one of these. But the symptoms, once you get down that valley and you're in there, it all merges into the same thing.